Good morning. It's 7:33 a.m. On Monday, the 25th of February. I'd like to call this meeting of the Safety Committee to order. In attendance are myself, Mark Fry as chair, Mrs. Westfall, Mr. Hayne, Mr. Lukey as members of the committee, Mrs. Capellini and Mrs. Hussman as members of council. In attendance also are Chief Rodas, Mr. Aller, and Ms. Brining from the administrative staff. No members of the press or an audience are in attendance at this point. So the purpose of this meeting this morning is to take the next logical steps in the consideration of the designated outdoor refreshment area, or ADORA. Mr. Lukey did a great job with Mr. Richardson's assistance, members of the community, both business and local residents, to consider the various things that needed to be thought through carefully with the potential creation of ADORA as far as timing and locations and geography and such. I wasn't able to attend the last council meeting, but I know Mr. Lukey made a presentation, and this was sent over to the Safety Committee for consideration and taking the next logical steps. In reviewing the document, I'll throw this to you, Mr. Lukey, again, to just briefly review a very high-level evaluation of your thought process associated with the ad hoc committee. But the one questions that I would like you to address briefly are the consideration for the police chief to visibly increase the presence on, I think this is page, I don't know, five of the document, four of the document, and then additional funding resources, and what the ad hoc committee thought process was associated with that. So with that, if you could just right. briefly go through this again,
sure.
That would be great.
I think the first of all, yeah, I think that the whole recommendations kind of speak for themselves, and I will say to you that it's ended up in a place different than where I thought it would when I started there, because my job in large part was to take the notes and do the report. But the some of the recommendations, including the downtown infrastructure piece, came from the neighbors and the merchants, and including merchants who are not on the committee. So we can talk about that piece if you want to later. In terms of the police presence, we did sit before as sort of almost our last step with Mr. Aller to talk about his reactions from a city administration standpoint. And he said at the end pretty much what he said at the beginning, which, and I believe Chief Rodas might have fed into this as well, that they didn't seem to see any particular extra requirement for police presence in downtown. That we have, you know, even when we have a big event, we may have an officer or two with a visible presence on foot, but generally speaking, they felt that this could be managed with the regular shifts and the regular, you know, slightly modified maybe protocol. What the committee felt, though, was that the first several, maybe the first month of this or the first several months is sort of a way for Sylvania to set the tone of how the DORA is going to go. So there was a feeling that although it wasn't essential, it might be helpful if we have an officer on the street during what we would anticipate to be busy times, just to show that the community is kind of means business in terms of enforcing the rules of the DORA. It's hard to anticipate, I suppose, what the busy times are, but I would imagine that would be Friday and Saturday nights, Saturday maybe in the afternoon, that kind of thing. So while that was not a requirement, I think the committee felt that that would be maybe a helpful step in the city establishing control of how the DORA is going to go. Mm-hmm. All right, is that helpful to you?
Very much.
Is that fair, Chief?
Well, I would say, you know, just like you already touched on, through our routine patrols, we can increase their presence downtown. I'm not sure if you want to put somebody out on foot during that time, but we can certainly maintain a greater presence downtown with just the patrols in, through, and around the DORA.
Okay.
So I think we can manage that without putting an officer out there. However, if we determine that we have enough adequate manpower on, we can certainly advise our officers, get out and take a walk down Main Street.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, clearly this was a recommendation by people who have no law enforcement background, right? So they were trying to anticipate what might work, but you're the professional. So I think that however the department decides to do it, the bottom line is just to create some sort of awareness on the part of the folks who are DORA customers, patrons, that we're watching. Kind of an interesting side point, Mr. Fry, is that there was a feeling among some of the more savvy people who have done events before and maybe have run businesses before that the Department of Liquor Control typically steps up its undercover presence when the door goes into effect.
Oh.
Now, obviously, this doesn't have the effect of a visible presence because they're undercover, right? Mm-hmm. But there seems to be a heightened amount of scrutiny to a community in the first couple of weeks. They're just, again, just to see how it's being managed. I don't know if you have any experience with that.
I would agree with your thought on that. You can certainly expect Liquor Control to be out there taking a look.
Yeah, okay, so, you know, from an actual pure public safety standpoint, it's covered a couple different ways, but I think from a public policy standpoint, the visible presence piece was the intent to put that in there.
I would just make, I would think, an increased vehicular patrol would be fine.
Yeah, I do too.
I think that'd be great. And with regard to the Department of Liquor Control, I would make sure that our businesses understand that they're going to be they're probably going to be tested, and they need to be prepared.
Yeah.
And there are people, and they need to do training up front to be prepared for this, because we don't want inadvertent or negligent violations of the DORA rules right off the bat with our local businesses.
Are you talking specifically about the establishment owners?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, actually, Doug, that's a recommendation that didn't come up in the committee, but I think some sort of briefing or whatever of our license holders would be a very appropriate step, kind of some training on how to handle this.
Yeah, and also, you know, an explanation that we would expect that you're going to be tested, so
yeah.
You need to have your people, you need to spend enough time training your people so that you don't have
right.
What would obviously be an unintentional, but nevertheless, real
well,
violation.
A very interesting unintended consequence of this, which I think the business owners are willing to accept as part of getting a DORA, is that, you know, some of our galleries give out wine on the first Friday nights, right?
Right.
Well, technically, that is in violation of the state law because they don't have a liquor permit, right? So I think their feeling, the Hudson Galleries of the world, for example, is that they just might back off on that for the first couple of months just to make sure that they stay legal. All right, so that's a piece.
I think that would be very prudent.
Yeah, and they understand that. But I think that, you know, it's all a matter of establishing the fact that we're on the up and up.
I have a question about that I don't know if anyone's going to know the answer. So, doesn't serve beer, somebody walks out of inside the five with a cup, and then they walk into the other business that doesn't have the liquor permit, and a liquor control person says, hey, wait a second, you can't be in here. Like, who's going to get the ticket? Is that the business owner, or is that the person that has the beer in their hand?
I can't answer that. Chief,
did you hear
that
question? I
think it's the person. I've got other people. I've had a couple of conversations with one of our local liquor control officers who's been really helpful in trying to explain this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that case, it's the person walking into an establishment, they didn't get the alcohol there, they just weren't providing the cup there. That's on the person. In the initially, they made some bar line and tried to impose a violation on the business owner as well, just to make sure that it doesn't happen. But if there's signs everywhere in Toledo. So I think people will understand it. It's just a matter of getting that.
One other point to that this actually was discussed at the committee, the ad hoc committee, and there was a feeling that the most effective way to sort of assign the liability appropriately would be to put clings on the doors or the windows right next to the doors on every business in downtown Sylvania that it says that no door cups are allowed in the establishment. And the general thought was that this is an appropriate thing for the Downtown Sylvania Association to fund. So, and there seemed to be an interest and willingness to do that. So I think we kind of pushed the responsibility onto the door patron if we put some signage up in every establishment, every business.
To that thought process, kind of adding on to Mr. Hanum's thinking about training, that may be something that needs to be a subject of a DSA meeting with an invite letter for all the downtown businesses so that there's, not just about associated with the clings, but so that the employees of those downtown establishments understand the rules to the greatest extent possible to avoid any unforeseen or unanticipated concerns. The other thing that I wanted you to briefly cover, if you don't mind, and maybe you covered this last week, Mr. Lukey, was the cost, the incremental cost for additional funding for the development of the DORA. It was a little unclear to me whether that was seeking grants or sponsorship dollars, whether that was something that the committee envisioned that would be the city's responsibility, or that would be DSA's responsibility, or where that lies.
Right. I think you're talking specifically about the only significant unassigned cost yet, which is the cost of the parklets,
mm-hmm.
correct? And this, again, we had quite a bit of conversation about this with Mr. Aller. And there is a general feeling that the cost to design and secure the materials for the parklets and some rudimentary putting it together are somewhere in the $6,000 range each. And the conversation was the fact that these would be temporary. They'd go up in the spring and be taken down in the fall, which I believe Mr. Aller thought was appropriate. But that the cost of securing the materials would be done by private sector sponsorships, quite honestly. And the $6,000 would be the price of entry for a company, let's say Kroger, to buy the materials, invest in that upfront cost, and then have a sponsorship tag on it for a year or two or three. So those costs would be secured privately. I think the part that we talked about was, who takes them up, who puts them down, where we store them. And again, the notion would be that a majority of this work would be done by volunteers from the Redbird or DSA or what have you. That was an offer made by the merchants, I think. But that there might be some heavy site prep. This is a parking spot that's a parking spot now, and there needs to be some site prep one time a year, and that might be done by city crews. Is that right, Mr. Aller?
Yes. Some of the prep work and things like that would be something, placement and all that, we'd want to make sure that they were placed according to, where we expect them to be placed. Obviously, we want to tie up as few parking spaces as possible, but still, make the parklets successful. The storage, storage is going to be a big, the city just doesn't, we don't have the space. So they'll have to arrange something for the storage of them.
Right. In that regard, the committee was fairly, committee members were fairly ready to take on the responsibility of finding space to store these, the pieces. Where? Yeah.
20 foot by 8 foot, plus or minus.
Yeah, yeah, it's big. I mean, it's not something you could put in your garage, really. So I think the thought would be that maybe there was some outreach might be appropriate to, say, Sage Yard, which seems to have an awful lot of property holdings around Sylvania. Maybe a private company, they thought maybe Pometica had some space on their flower campus. But I think that Scott Hudson and his people were willing to sort of pursue that so that the city doesn't have to. They appreciated the upfront heads up that city can't take responsibility for that. The bigger question, I think, is who is going to go out and try to raise the money to get 4 parklets built here. And it's actually 3, because the 4th one is out in front of, on the side of J&G's, and I think that kind of will take care of itself. But although it wasn't specifically identified, I would encourage us not to have the city take point on that. I don't think that's necessarily an appropriate city assignment for city staff. I think we could perhaps enlist the DSA or the Redbird people or some downtown interests in taking the lead on identifying prospects and making those calls.
Mm-hmm. So I would just say, if we're thinking this through, we need to attention that at some point, making sure that our main street looks nice and all of those parklets are in the right kind of condition and set up correctly and looking correctly is likely going to end at some level back in the city.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you saw in the recommendations, and this was sort of vetted through Mr. Fry, we feel that the exchange, the quid pro quo for having the city be involved with this at all, is for the DSA to establish a permanent seat on its board for the city, which is something we have to remember to ask them to do. Because as you recall, our current arrangement, I believe, Mark, is that we have a seat at the DSA as long as our funding continues. And our funding is designed to go away after some period of time. So I would say that it would become the city council's representative to DSA to make sure that this stays on their plate and doesn't gravitate to the cities.
And when there's a problem with the units, that it's somebody else, somebody does graffiti on the side of the...
Yeah, that would
be the DSA.
I don't think, that's unclear. I don't think we've talked about that.
The other question I had in looking at the parklets, because I think that's a wonderful concept as well. And I think I already know the answer to the question, but I'm going to raise it anyways. The ownership question and the maintenance question to me go hand in hand with liability. Somebody, you know, has one too many adult beverages and steps off the curb,
right,
and trips and, you know, off one of the parklets and trips and falls, and I imagine they're going to file lawsuits against everybody and their brother, perhaps in some cases, but that liability insurance, I'm assuming, needs to be carried by the owner. And I'm looking at Ms. Brining for that.
Yeah. The owner being who?
Well, I'm assuming that would have to be DSA.
Yeah. Any additional liability insurance would have to be maintained by the DSA. and to and with the Livingston and the way, they haven't had any issues with that. But again, you know,
right.
Yeah. It might go 10 years and then you have 3 in a week, you know, who knows.
Yeah. And Mary, I will tell you that the liability piece was one issue that absolutely didn't come up at the subcommittee. Okay, so thank you for raising that. I think that probably, keep in mind that the subcommittee's perception of what this recommendation was about was for the first year, right? So there was a pretty strong consensus that we would come back together, hopefully with the same group. All of them were prepared to come back in October, you know, after we've had some experience with this, to sort of fine-tune it and retool it if we have to. But I think at that point it leaves the door open for us to change up just about anything with the DORA, and that's written in here. The point, though, is that it strikes me that liability issue needs to be extremely formally crafted in some way, in some document, so people really understand that.
Maybe in the ordinance if we continue forward.
Yeah.
Could see all this coming.
And just mechanically, because this brings up a timing issue, perhaps. Does this require a zoning change?
No.
So this is just an ordinance that would be passed by council after appropriate process, correct?
There's some procedural requirements in the code as far as public
hearing. Right.
And public hearing.
Yeah. Okay.
And the parklets are separate. That's, we kind of have these kind of parallel processes with the DORA being one hand and the parklets being the other. So it doesn't all have to be nailed down before the DORA. The parklets don't have to be nailed down before the DORA is technically established.
Well, I'm guessing it won't be.
Right.
So
and why wouldn't we be able to do them in parallel? Well, I guess my point is, legislatively, we need to be clear what we're going to require of these parklets before they're going to be able to fund them.
Yes.
In other words,
that's a good point, Mr. Hamm.
I wouldn't commit to do a parklet if I didn't know what regulatory hurdles I was doing. So I could see all this coming. I mean, a license instead of regulations associated with establishing those, where they could be. I would think we would want that spelled out in the DORA legislation.
Well,
could I suggest?
Well, I think they could be. I think we could establish the DORA.
Right.
We could establish the parklets, and if the parklets come, that's great. We still would have the DORA.
Yeah, let me suggest, Doug, that maybe a legal and practical way to approach this would be to ask Leslie if she could prepare a set of rules and regulations for the parklets, right? Who owns them, whatever issues need to be, and maybe make that a companion piece that by resolution or something council approves at the same time as we approve the DORA.
Well, I would think that what would be in the DORA legislation would be an opportunity for council to approve parklets subject to securing of a license issued by our public safety division by rules that they establish. In other words, we wouldn't have to, you put it in the ordinance that we're going to have a license and we can work on the because we have a lot of instances where our licenses could morph over time. We don't need to put that in the legislation. We could then develop a license that would specify, the whatever construction requirements we want, location, notice to the city, insurance. Those are the ones I'm thinking of right off the bat.
But I think make
the design subject to approval.
So it's an optionality. You don't need the parklets to have the DORA, but it's included or embedded as the potential to create parklets subject to administrative oversight by the city.
Right.
Yeah. I think a critical piece of what you said is the fundamental question of who owns the parklets, right? I mean, we own the real estate because it's a parking spot, but who actually has the responsibility for managing the parklet piece? And I will have to tell you, I've not had any direct conversation with the DSA about this, right? It's been the members of the committee. It may well be that this is beyond the DSA's willingness to take it on, but I'm sure that we can find a community partner who would do this. This is something that Michelle at the chamber can do in her sleep, right, in terms of managing this. I'm not suggesting that's where we want it, but I would say that if council had a interest in establishing the ownership question early, we should probably start by reaching out to the DSA and taking their temperature about that.
There's a board meeting on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Today,
yeah.
I'll bring it up in the meeting on Thursday, assuming we don't have another snowstorm that cancels the meeting. the regular DSA meeting was canceled earlier in the month because of this, because of the
right.
Weather.
Yeah, that was the meeting where we were going to go in and present to them. It got canceled.
Right. Okay. Are there any other thoughts or comments or concerns by members of council?
Upside doesn't?
Huh?
Upside?
Yeah,
oh, they're not open.
What about Sidebuster?
What about Chandler's?
Chandler's sells wine in the afternoon, I think. Well, they might.
Chandler's doesn't on the website.
Hmm. In fact, I believe executive serves alcohol in the morning for breakfast.
Well, again, I didn't know that, and Katie didn't know that, actually. She said, I think I'm the one actually that serves it
before. Yeah, I think the bigger issue from the subcommittee was not so much a Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, but a Saturday at 11 o'clock. Right, where people come down to Inside the Five for lunch on a Saturday, they want to have a beer with their hot dog or whatever, and so you know it's.
They'd be offended.
Hmm.
They'd
be offended.
Food than hot dogs.
But the feeling, as you know, I think Mary, you've had these conversations with some of the stakeholders, is that if you promote a Dora and somebody comes down the first time and can't be served at 11 o'clock on a Saturday, they probably will write it off as one more place that they're not going to come back to, right, because they said it was a Dora. Well, okay. We're expecting the public to have more tenacity than that, right? But I don't know. I'm just trying to explain to you what the rationale was. I didn't particularly see that coming either, but they were.
Where did 10 o'clock come from?
It was a compromise, actually, because there was a group of the members, including Mr. Richardson, who felt that it shouldn't be restricted at all, that it should conform to what the state of Ohio says is legal hours for establishments, which I think is early in the morning, right? Earlier in the morning. So it was a compromise away from all the time to something that seemed to have a little bit more rationale to it.
Okay.
Well, I again think that that'll be a critical point for discussion in a public meeting.
Right. Right. Mary, if the public has no problem with it, how would you feel about that?
I think perhaps 11, when the establishment that serves it open is an option, but why would we have it when there's nobody even open?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if executives do Bloody Marys or mimosas on Sunday morning, I don't know if they do, but that's just an example that I could think of. I have no idea.
I think that's a negotiable point, certainly, but I would not want to impede the what the marketplace wants. Not what the merchants want, but the... Yeah. Yeah, that's my point. Correct. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Sussman, you seem eager to...
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a good listener, but every once in a while I have to talk.
Please.
And referring to the time, do we know what Toledo's is? Is it 24 hour?
That's what I'm told.
Okay. Of course, that's, once again, not in a neighborhood. I agree with Mary about the 10 a.m. was a surprise to me. I don't know what the state rules are. And it used to be you couldn't even buy liquor in the morning anyplace, but especially on a Sunday morning. But the other end of that is what time is closing time. We say closing every day, but there's no time. I don't know.
Leslie, do you know that?
I don't know what time the...
I would say most of your establishments, such as Sodbuster, probably closes around 2:30.
Okay.
Inside the Five, I'm not sure.
So people could legitimately buy a drink at Sodbuster at 2:30 in the morning and go out and start walking around town with that drink. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, personally, that alarms me more than the early start.
Yeah. I'm concerned about that, too, because by that time, they're probably in somewhat of a fog.
Well, right.
And then they're walking the streets. And granted, there's a whole lot of traffic, but I guess I would want something more specific than closing. So I don't know what that is, and I agree. I don't think we need to start at 10 a.m. Maybe 11. So I do feel like there should be some restriction on time. I have another thing is about the parklets. I think they're adorable. But I do think they're a safety issue, which is, this is a safety committee meeting. So I noticed the picture of the one that we are shown shows it coming up even with the curb so that there's not a step down.
Correct.
Or a step up. And I think that's probably the most important thing of all.
And that was purposeful.
Yes.
Design that.
Yes. So and I don't know if that's how it's installed or if that's how it's built and if we have to tell them how high our curb is at those particular places. But I think it, for sure, it should be an even off the sidewalk and not an up and down kind of situation. Another point I wondered about, and I think it's covered, I think we've been told this before, but supposedly there's another brewery that's going to be opening, which is not in their, that space is, I think, is not included in the current drawing of what the downtown Dora is. So what do we do going forward? Is it like we deal with one at a time as we decide to move?
Well,
I'm not quite sure
what brewery you're talking
about. Comstock.
Yeah.
Am I right? It's not included.
Last time I checked, that wasn't there yet. And
right,
you know,
exactly.
I believe that there's a second coming as well, but I'm not keeping my porch light on for it, right? So I will believe that when I see it.
Okay.
But more importantly,
Leslie
might want to explain this, because we do have the ability not to create another DORA, but to make sure, add a property that's contiguous to the existing DORA.
That is correct. We can amend the boundaries anytime. There's no restriction on it. It just can't, the size cannot exceed, I believe it's 150 acres.
I think we're good.
Yes, we are good. And, but also, too, that one is along Monroe Street, and I think initially the committee wanted to keep it a little bit tighter, because it doesn't go down to Tequila, you know, but it's more of a focus on the downtown.
But we do, it's a fairly simple process to extend it, correct?
Absolutely. It just has an ordinance, and you don't have to go through a, I shouldn't say that. You may have to go through the public process again.
Nothing wrong with that.
Correct.
Well,
it's just an ordinance.
Another point to be brought forward in that regard, Mrs. Hussman, is this is initially just rolled out for 1 year.
Correct.
We get a sense of, okay, is this something that, you know, beyond the meetings, the actual usage of this DORA, we don't know what that's going to look like yet. It might be used constantly by people, or it might be used infrequently by people. We just don't have a sense of that. So I think the places that are going to be serving the DORA, you know, to allow the people to walk around, they'll be the ones that will indicate, I think, to some extent, plus our, you know, our own observations on what this looks like. How frequently, how popular, do we want it to continue? If so, do we want to make modifications? Geography, hours, what have you.
Yeah, you know, I didn't mean to be flippant about the Comstock project, but but I am not sure that they have their liquor license yet, do they?
I have no idea.
I mean, I would say that's the minimum trigger point to
but
be able to.
But I do think if someone is wants to open a liquor selling establishment nearby, that it would be, I think it would be important to them that they know that they could be included in this. Rather than excluded.
Yes, and that's
economic
development. Right.
I talked to Kevin about this, and I told him, you know, when he got things going, we'd figure it out.
Yeah, and we will. And quite honestly, that was discussed at the committee, as was what's going to happen with phase two of SOMO, right? Rumor keeps circulating that there will be a couple of restaurants where the tire store is. Okay. So the notion is that we also have the ability to jump across Monroe Street at that point, too.
So I think we need to
Can Frickers
vet that a little bit.
Can the people in Frickers walk into Frickers parking lot? The parking lot is public for
No,
I mean currently. Does their liquor license? With regard to hours, I'm kind of in the Patrick camp on this. You know, if you're having a Bloody Mary at Executive Parkway on a Saturday, on a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, this is all conversation that comes out of the euphoria about Adora, but the owners of Executive were quoted as saying that that's exactly what they would do if they did have a DORA. They would stay open later and serve at night, and they would open on the weekends so that people could have their, you know, they'd refine their product a little bit more at Executive. So, I'm sorry? Well, sure, and I think that's all a good thing. I think Chandler's actually told Jane that they would be willing to be a little bit more formal about their wine service in the afternoon if they had a door, if they had a parklet out front.
Okay. Any other?
I have one thing. So the participants, I think, need to know. I mean, we're telling the businesses, you know, that they need training. I think that's wonderful, but as you're walking with your drink, will we have, like, signs that say no alcohol beyond this point?
Yes.
And so that they know that they should go further.
Yes, that's actually in the ordinance, in the DORA regulations, and the city, it's incumbent upon the city to establish signs to designate the borders of the DORA, and that was part of our conversation with Mr. Aller, and he indicated that that was a legitimate use of the city sign shop to create those signs and put them on the boundaries of where. Am I right about that, Kevin?
Yes.
Ms. Capellini?
I thought a few things, but I don't think we're going to have answers for them right now. I'm just throwing them out there because I think that they need to be, have some further discussion. So my first thing was to expand on Sandy's thing about, you know, making it even. And if you look online, there's a bunch of other cities that have like 30-page documents on how you're going to build a parklet. And there's a deck, there's an enclosure, there's amenities, and how it's all going to be put together. And so, like, even the part that's even, so it's ADA accessible, and the enclosure, so it doesn't block the traffic if it's driving down the street. I mean, so I'm wondering if there is a piece of zoning. I mean, so not only do we want them to be safe, but we also want them to look amazing. Like, we don't want one of them built, and then maybe ProMedica comes along and says, hey, I want my green. Yeah, I mean, we want them, our downtown is small, and we want them to look, like, consistent, so our downtown doesn't look like it's mismatched. So I feel like there might be a little bit of a zoning piece, and probably once Leslie sees some of the other things that are online, And then the other thing is, I feel like the parklets and the DORA need to come together. I don't want people to come down and, oh, now they have a DORA, and then they come down here and there's nowhere to sit. I don't want people to be disappointed. I want them to be impressed. I want them to go, wow, Salvino really does it right. Not, oh, so now we have a DORA, but now what do we do? And I don't, like, even the J&G spot, I don't imagine that that's going to take care of itself. I think that should be, like, have a nice design to it. It doesn't need a deck and enclosure, but the seating areas and the benches or whatever it's going to be should look amazing.
Yeah, you know, so, go ahead.
I think it can make a great point for Katie, and I know that we're in front of our time. That's the only thing that worries me about this year, because clearly that's not
well, maybe they don't all have to happen at once. I mean, there's the two of them are going to be definitely harder. The ones that have the deck, the enclosure, that are in the parking spot are obviously going to be harder. But the one at J&G is not going to be that hard, because all it needs is the amenities. Doesn't need the deck and the enclosure part. So if we're only going to start with one, let's make it look amazing. So when people come down, they go, wow, so being in rocks, we really did right.
As we move through the process, it'll be interesting to see. Well,
right. When we talk about, we talked earlier about a rules and regulations for the parklet, I would assume, Leslie, that would include aesthetics as well, right? So just keep, remember, we're talking about three parklets, right? That one is across the street from Inside the Five on Maplewood. There's three parking spots there now at the corner in front of a yoga studio. One of those would become a parklet. And then there would be two at the crosswalk, one on each side of the street on Main Street. So three parklets.
It's also important to recognize that, while I agree, ideally the parklets would be constructed and ready to go whenever the DORA is ready to go. We are talking about entities physically arranging, coming up with $6,000 for three parklets, at least $6,000,
yep.
Getting them constructed. So while the mechanics of that don't seem all that daunting, for someone who's had work done on their house, it can be a little more daunting than what you expect. And that's the only thing that I would caution us to have a realistic expectation. It may not be till summer before all of those parklets would, you know, go through that process and be constructed. The only way to get around that would be for the city to actually take on that economic burden, and
No.
I don't know that I would be supportive of that
No.
in the circumstances of what we're talking about.
Okay. I would.
Sometimes I hate what I become, but the Board of Architectural Review could review parklet design.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Which again brings in a mechanical training. Procedural question.
Right.
So one more thing, I got that the city is going to do the site work and figure out like how it's going to go, and then the DSA is going to store it. Who's actually going to like put it there and then take it up and then put it back? Like is that?
My understanding is that the city would do the foundation work. I mean, how would you?
We'll do the placement once it gets downtown. I wouldn't want it, again, because we don't own it, I wouldn't want to be the transporter of it. So getting it.
The DSA will need to, like, get out there, take up all the pieces, get the truck, put it on the truck, and then take it to wherever it comes.
Right. Right. And then following spring, they bring it back, they set it. We'll help with the placement and making sure that we get, you know, that we get it set correctly and make sure that all the pieces are in good shape, nothing's come apart, but I wouldn't want to transport it just because we don't own it, so I wouldn't want to take that on.
And you don't want to be responsible for constructing it and assembling it.
Correct.
Yours is more a review and approval process.
Yes.
Right. And protecting the city's interest in the placement of it, right? I would say
we will have, you know, Ms. Westfall addressed it. We will. I mean, it is taking up a parking space, which that's fine. But we're gonna have traffic on Main Street, so we've got to make sure that's accommodated. We don't want people clipping mirrors or anything like that. So.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I think we can expect that the populating downtown with parklets will be driven by underwriting. Right. Nothing happens until some private sector company writes a check for $6,000 to buy the pieces and parts and commit to putting it there. I have to tell you, I've already had one inquiry just based on the newspaper story. Yeah. 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 Right.
Right.
You would think. So anyway, and I think that some of the DSA people have identified non-traditional sponsors. I mean, clearly we have to expect that maybe a wine distributor or a beer distributor would want to take this on.
So, coming close to 8:30, so Mrs. Hussman, quickly.
A thought process is rather than going for 6,000, I'm wondering if it should be 10,000 and include, like, that would be the storage and the thing.
It's going to be 20.
I mean, looking at what other cities are building, okay. Estimates of like when they say, okay,
but more
this
than
is the standard, this is your cost, it's going to be between 20 and 30. I mean, those are like coasts like Philadelphia and San Francisco. And
I think we should let DSA decide what this thing's going to cost.
More than 6 grand.
Yeah.
Well, I think...
Not allowed to do both at the same time. Legally, I think that's part of the ORC, correct?
That is part of it. You can't take your car from the J&J parking lot. You can't take your car into that. You could have simultaneous events, but that becomes a little bit cumbersome. You have to stand outside of the parking lot, finish your drink, and then you can go in. But the other, I think, the point that was brought up at the committee and Mark, could you correct me if I'm wrong, was that those are more fundraising for those organizations, and having the door in place could present a competition.
Yeah. That was actually the starting premise, Mary, that the downtown merchants didn't want to do anything to cannibalize a revenue stream for one of the nonprofits. Okay, so the Arts Commission, right, has its event, and they didn't want to be in competition with that organization making their money from the beer. Yeah.
Somebody's going to walk in and they're used to doing it, and now we say they can't, now they're next. It doesn't
Yeah, so I agree with that, and I'm going to raise this publicly, even though I was going to take it up privately with the law director after the meeting, because I didn't want to put you on the spot. But I was told last week by a downtown Toledo DORA stakeholder that there is a piece of legislation in the legislature now that would change the DORA rules to address Mrs. Westfall's question. Do you know anything about that?
I just looked that it is currently pending. It isn't enacted yet.
But it does. Is the sense of it to do what she's suggesting?
Yes, but I don't, you know, until it's enacted, we can only go on what the says of the law is.
It is incongruent with what the intent is, but I think they felt that they wanted to preserve. There's two organizations, right, that get money from beer down there now. Is that right?
Just one.
Arts Commission. Okay.
Well, I'm just giving my opinion. I'm all for a DORA. I think it would be a great thing downtown. However, I would highly suggest, recommend the council that you start little baby steps. Possibly looking at the DORA Thursday through Sunday, 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock to midnight. The one thing that concerns me, if you have somebody out walking after midnight with the cup and they get a little rowdy, you have the residents still around that area, slightly the apartments, some other areas. So I don't think you really want people out walking around after midnight downtown. So for what it's worth, that would be my recommendation. Start out small, and then if you find out that it's working, then you can expand the hours or the days.
The one thing I would ask Mr. Fry is to schedule now, if we can, the next committee hearing, assuming he wants to have one more, or a public meeting that we can hold at a more accessible time. Okay, so we have, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 7 o'clock at night, that we promote to our community and give them an opportunity to come in. I think there's a high level of expectation that a public process includes a true public process, right? Kind of like we do with our highway construction, kind of like the library did. So I would hope that we could get those on the books so that we could begin telling people that if you have an opinion about DORA, you can come in at a set time and talk about it.
Ms. Briney, I was under the impression it took two public hearings for this, or just one? Or public meetings, excuse me.
There is a public hearing requirement by the statute. Publish 2 consecutive weeks, 1 public hearing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and Mr. Lukey, your recommendation from the committee was to move this, hopefully, and have this ready to go by the end of the first quarter?
Correct.
Committee members, thoughts on just one public hearing or two?
Let me tell you my thought about that. It strikes me that once we have a formal public meeting, the kind that Leslie was describing where we notice it, it's going to be very hard to tweak this in any way. I mean, the public will come in, they'll tell us what they like or they don't like, and we can respond to that. But I guess my thought would be to, I don't know. I think we've vetted this pretty well. Maybe we do have a sense about what it will look like. I was going to suggest. Yeah, no, I was going to suggest that we handle it through this committee, but hold a committee meeting at, say, 5 o'clock some afternoon, and then rather than notice it legally, informally make our stakeholders aware that there's a meeting to be, because, you know, obviously there's nobody here from the committee today, right, because they didn't feel they needed to come, but perhaps get some actual true public input in a informal way by noticing the committee meeting in the afternoon and have people come in, and then have a formal hearing, which strikes me, Leslie, as just being a little bit more finite, right? I mean, there's, the, or not. So what we would vet at that public hearing is sort of not the input that we got today, but just the same basic premise that's in the recommendations. I don't have a problem with just jumping to that, Mary, really. Yeah. I mean, clearly the committee has had good input today.
And
yeah, and I guess with that in mind, I'd rather see us have a public meeting. Obviously, we can't have it for 2 weeks, right, because we have to notice it.
Yeah, it'd have to be the 11th.
Of March.
Yes.
Yeah, I would push for the earliest possible date, then. The 11th is what day of the week?
Monday, 2 weeks from today.
Ahead of a council meeting?
No, it's not. It's between. We could do it the 18th, but that would...
No, it's pushing it too far. Yeah, at what time? What time?
12. I'm okay with 12. But I don't want to do it at, I don't want to do it at 5.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's, no.
So okay, when are we having this hearing?
Does March 12th look for you? Look okay for you?
What time?
12?
Yeah, that's a Tuesday.
What time?
Well, I don't want to do it at 5.
You do not want to do it at 5?
No, I would. Well, if we want the public to actually show up.
Yeah, do it at 7.
Downtown business is closed. That's when you need to have it. Those are the people that hopefully will come.
Actually, I would prefer to have people from the neighborhoods at least as much as the downtown businesses. I think we already have a sense the downtown businesses are favorably inclined towards it. It's the neighborhood, the people that live in the neighborhoods. I would be more interested in
what
hearing
from.
What
time are you thinking about having?
I was thinking about 6, 6:30.
Yeah,
oh,
I can't.
7.
I can't be here till 6 on the 12th.
Okay.
So.
Well, let's make you 6:30.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
On the
19th.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's set it for.
On March 12th.
March 12th at.
And that will be a public hearing.
Correct.
Correct.
Which is under your purview, correct? Okay.
Are there any
Well, Blade isn't publishing tomorrow.
Well, sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, does it even meet the requirement on Tuesday?
Did you get your paper this morning?
Well, it's no longer published.
And my new slide doesn't load.
Is a non-physical publishment a publishment? Well, if we can't do it the 12th legally, we can't do it the 12th. So, well, I would rather do it the 18th if we're going to do it. I mean, then we align it with a council meeting.
So, well, yeah, that's great. So, what, 6:30?
Yeah, let's do it 6:30 on the 18th then.
No, we're going to do it on the 18th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which probably doesn't give Leslie time to get legislation prepared for that night, right?
I don't even want legislation.
No, I agree. So all I'm saying is what that, in fact, does is move the council decision till the first meeting in April.
Right.
Which is on the 1st, so technically it's the same time frame. It'd be nice, but it's not necessary.
Great. So we're set for 6:30 p.m. on Monday, March 18th for the public hearing on the DORA. We'll advertise to get that through the process. Anything else to come before the committee? If not, we're adjourned at 8:32. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.